Chapter 11. A Rift in Ivan. Illuminated by the May sun not 1 hour ago, the forest on the far bank of the river had now dimmed, blurred, and dissolved. Water fell in a solid wall outside the window. Flashing threads of lightning cracked the sky every now and then, flooding the patient's room with frightening, quivering light. Sitting on his bed and watching the muddy river boil over with bubbles, Ivan wept quietly. At every thunderclap, he would cry out miserably and cover his face with his hands. Sheets of paper full of Ivan's writing lay on the floor. They had been blown all over the place by the wind that burst into the room just before the storm. The poet's attempt to write a statement about the horrible consultant did not lead anywhere. As soon as he received a pencil stub and some paper from the portly attendant, known as Praskovya Fyodorovna, he rubbed his hands together busily and quickly sidled up to the table. The beginning came out rather robustly. To the police, from Masoret member, Ivan Nikolaevich, homeless. Statement. Yesterday evening, I came to Patriarch's Ponds with the deceased M.A. Berlioz. And right away, the poet was thrown off, mostly on account of the word deceased. It sounded nonsensical. How could he have come with a deceased man? The deceased do not walk. They were liable to really take him for a madman. Thinking along these lines, Ivan Nikolaevich began to correct what he had written. This resulted in, with M.A. Berlioz, thereafter deceased, which did not please the author either. He was forced to produce a third version, which turned out even worse than the first two. Berlioz, who fell under a tram. And then that irrelevant composer with the same last name got stuck in his head, and he had to insert, not the composer. Tormented by these two Berliozes, Ivan crossed everything out and decided to begin with something very striking to immediately capture the reader's attention. He wrote first about how the cat tried to board the tram, and then returned to the episode involving the severed head. The head and the consultant's prediction led him to Pontius Pilate, and, for added credibility, Ivan decided to recount the entire tale about the procurator from the moment the man emerged onto the colonnade of Herod's palace in a white cape with blood-red lining. Ivan worked diligently, crossing out his writing and adding new words, and even attempted to draw Pontius Pilate and then the cat walking on hind paws. But the drawings did not help either, and the further along he went, the more jumbled and incomprehensible the poet's statement became. By the time the frightening storm cloud with smoky edges appeared from afar and covered the forest, by the time the wind blew in, Ivan felt that he was exhausted, that he could not conquer the statement. He did not pick up the scattered sheets, but instead began to cry quietly and bitterly. The kind-hearted attendant, Praskovya Fyodorovna, came by to check on the poet during the storm. Seeing him crying, she grew worried, closed the blinds so that the thunderbolts would not frighten the patient, picked up the sheets from the floor, and ran with them to the doctor. The latter appeared, gave Ivan a shot in the arm, and assured him that he would not cry any more, that everything would get better, everything would change, and everything would be forgotten. The doctor was right. Soon, the faraway forest stood as before, clearly painted down to the last tree, on a backdrop of sky that cleared up to its usual perfect blue. The river calmed down as well. Ivan's sorrow began to leave him immediately after the shot, and now the poet lay calmly on his bed and looked at the rainbow that draped over the sky. This went on until evening, and he did not even notice how the rainbow had melted, how the sky had saddened and faded, how the forest grew black. After a drink of hot milk, Ivan lay down again and was amazed at how his thought process had changed. The accursed demonic cat blurred somehow in his memory, and the severed head no longer frightened him. Abandoning all thoughts of it, Ivan came to contemplate that, in fact, it was quite decent here at the clinic. that Stravinsky was a smart and famous guy, and that it was very pleasant to deal with him. On top of that, the evening air was sweeter and fresher after the storm. The House of Sorrow was falling asleep. The white frosted glass lights in the hallways were turned off and replaced, according to regulation, with dim blue nightlights. The attendants' careful steps on the rubber mats of the hallway came less and less frequently. Ivan now lay in sweet lethargy, glancing sometimes at the shaded lamp pouring soft light from the ceiling, sometimes at the moon rising from the black forest, and talked to himself.
Why, come to think of it, did I get so upset over Berlioz falling under the tram? Mused the poet. To the junk heap with him already. What am I, his buddy or his in-law? If we drill this question properly, it turns out I never actually knew the deceased too well. After all, what did I know about him? Absolutely nothing, except that he was bald and horribly articulate. And furthermore, gentlemen...
Ivan continued his speech to an unseen audience.
Let's examine something here. Why did I, if you'd be so kind as to tell me, get so mad at that mysterious consultant, magician, and professor with the empty black eye? Why the senseless chase in the long johns, candle in hand, and then all that crazy mishmash at the restaurant?
But, the old Ivan said sternly to the new Ivan from somewhere, perhaps from inside, perhaps into his ear.
He knew in advance that Berlioz would get his head chopped off after all. How could one not get worried? What's to speak of, comrades? The new Ivan objected to the ancient former one. Even a child could tell there was something odd going on. That character was 100% unusual and mysterious. But then again, that's the most interesting thing. The man personally knew Pontius Pilate. What could be more interesting than that? And instead of raising that stupid disturbance on the patriarchs, wouldn't it have been smarter to ask him politely what happened afterwards to Pilate and that prisoner, Harnotzery? And instead, I started doing hell knows what. Big deal, really. A journal editor gets run over. What, will the journal shut down or something? Well, what can you do? Man is mortal and, as it was very justly said, unexpectedly mortal. May he rest in peace. Another editor will come, perhaps even more articulate than the first.
After dozing off briefly, the new Ivan asked the old Ivan derisively,
"So what does that make me, then?"
"A fool," a low voice said clearly from somewhere, belonging to neither of the Ivans, and strikingly resembling that of the consultant. For some reason, Ivan was not at all offended at being called a fool, but even pleasantly surprised. He sniggered and fell silent, only half awake. Sleep stole towards Ivan, and he was already imagining a palm tree with an elephantine trunk and a cat passing by. Not a scary, but a happy one. In other words, a second more and sleep would engulf him. Then suddenly, the window grating slid noiselessly aside, and a mysterious figure appeared on the balcony, hiding from the moonlight, and shook a finger at Ivan. Unafraid, Ivan raised himself on the bed and saw that a man was standing on the balcony, and pressing a finger to his lips, the man whispered, "Shh."